introduce a little anarchy. Upset the established order.
Launch control. We are going for launch.
Rip and Shred. You are listening to the Casey Ferguson Show on Emerson Island Radio 92.1 FM. Yes, it's Casey Ferguson here, the Holden Caulfield of Community Radio, back with another late night hour of power, sure to turn your straight hairs curly and your curly hairs straight.
Great, I'm the only guy in the world that has to wake up to have a nightmare.
From the sound of white noise, that was Anthrax kicking off the show. The track is called Only. Now, I pride myself on being honest with you, maniacs, so I'm just going to give this to you straight. I'm angry. In fact, I am hotter than Satan's house cat. Now, this is nothing new, but lately it's really been bothering me. I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired. Don't worry, I won't bore you with the details. We have a lot of fun here on this show, and I don't aim to change that, but I do want you to understand that my time on air is not just for kicks. Spinning songs and waxing philosophical is also a form of therapy for me. It's a release, it's an outlet, and given the amount of time that I spend between the podcast and this radio show, it's essentially my life. Now, I used to pick up my guitar and hit the road when life got hard, but now I pick up albums and hit a microphone. Of course, the albums I pick up will depend on the mood I'm in. If I'm in a good mood, I might reach for some AC/DC or some Kiss. If I'm down, I'm more likely to reach for Bob Dylan's Blood on the Tracks, some Town Van Zandt, or some old blues. But when I'm angry, like I have been, I reach for the hard stuff. So, that's what I'm going to spin for you this time out, and hopefully by the end of the show, we'll all feel better. If that doesn't instill you with much confidence, know that I'll also have an interview for you with Brendan Small, the man behind the music and co-creator of the TV show, Metalocalypse.
Big interview, huh?
Yes.
I remember when I was your age, working for the school newspaper, I had an interview with an up-and-coming young musician.
Beethoven?
Yes, Beethoven. No, not Beethoven. It was someone who was a hero in my day, a role model for all of us. His name? Engelbert Humperdinck.
Plus, music on the way from Atreyu, Seven Dust, and Five Finger Death Punch as we put the pedal to the metal. This is Slipknot Psychosocial on The Casey Ferguson Show.
We kill it all. The hate was all we had. Who needs another?
What's up, listeners? This is Dizzy Reed from Guns N' Roses, and you're rocking out with Katie Ferguson.
Casey Ferguson Show.
Crackish. Bullseye. Crackish. Bullseye. The time has come to awaken him. Bullseye.
Strutting and strolling, ramming and jamming. You're listening to the Casey Ferguson Show on Amherst Island Radio 92.1 FM. Going back to 2007 there, that was Wakened by Death Clock. Before that was Atreyu with their rendition of the Faith No More classic Epic. And at the top of that mound of molten metal from the album All Hope Is Gone was Slipknot, Psychosocial. Speaking of such things, with all the insanity going on over the last while, it's no real surprise that I've been having a lot of bad dreams lately. For instance, the other night I had a dream that I was vomiting blood. Pretty metal, right? But what does it mean?
Whoa! You must be sick! Let's see. What's all Doc Washburn prescribe? Do you have dropsy? The grip? Scrofula? The vapors? Jungle rot? Dandy fever? Poor man's gout? Housemaid's knee? Climactic boobo? The staggers? Dum-dum fever?
Look, I know some of you may not believe in dream analysis, but I think there's something to it, so I picked up a book a while back to hopefully decode my dreams and make sense of what my subconscious is trying to tell me. Perhaps coincidentally, the book is called Dream Dictionary for Dummies. The author's name is Penny Pierce.
She's been picked up so many times, she's starting to grow handles.
This book has a section that breaks down the things that you see in your dreams and what they mean into three different categories: physical, emotional, and mental spiritual, and to be honest, it's always proven, for me at least, to be pretty bang on. So what does it mean when you vomit blood in your dream? First off, I looked up the word vomit in the dream dictionary. Physical. You need to purge yourself of something that is toxic or unhealthy for you. There is a person or situation you can't stomach that is not nurturing. Emotional. You need to reject or discard an aspect of your life that is revolting. You refuse to accept a situation, change, or relationship. Mental spiritual. You recognize and reject what is untrue or doesn't align with your life purpose. Next, I looked up blood in the dream dictionary. Physical. You're looking at vitality and life force as well as danger. Bleeding to death means something is draining your creativity and energy. Menstrual blood symbolizes fertility or cleansing. Okay, that last one probably doesn't apply to me per se, but if I ever have my period in a dream or otherwise, you'll be the first to know. Well, after a team of doctors or scientists, I suppose. Emotional. You are focusing on a denied emotional wound, anger, hatred, or fear or loss of a part of your life. Bloody violence indicates emotional upheaval. Mental spiritual. You are aware of the source of all life and what makes you strong. So there you have it, folks. Not only the meaning of vomiting blood in your dreams, but also a completely untamed and unwanted journey into my subconscious. You're welcome.
Yeah, I guess that's what my horoscope meant when it said kaboom.
My guest on this episode of The Casey Ferguson Show is producer, writer, animator, stand-up comedian, voice actor, and musician, Brendan Small. Brendan is perhaps best known as the co-creator of the animated series Home Movies and Metalocalypse. He composed and performed all of the music in both of those shows, including the music for the virtual metal band Death Clock. The band's second record, Death Album 2, reached number 15 on the Billboard 200, making it the highest charting death metal album in history. Brendan is also a graduate of Berklee College of Music. He's had his music featured in Guitar Hero and Rocksmith, released signature guitars with Gibson and Epiphone, and even directed the Black Rain video for Soundgarden. Brendan and I will discuss his latest project, Galacticon 2, Metalocalypse, his upcoming comic book, and more. This is my interview with Brendan Small on The Casey Ferguson Show. This is Casey Ferguson. You are listening to The Casey Ferguson Show. Brendan Small is on the phone. Brendan's new album, Galacticon 2, Become the Storm, is out August 25th, 2017. First off, welcome to the show, Brendan. How goes the battle, man?
Going well. Thank you for having me. It's nice to battle and to be talking about it. I don't know what to say. I don't have anything good. But things are going well. Thank you very much. I'm excited about this record. Excited about the whole new world that Galacticon engulfs.
Oh, I mean, I can see why. It seems like it's going to be... I haven't got to hear the whole record yet, but I got the first single, and it seems like it's going to be a really cool record. And, I mean, you're a guy who's used to working under the gun with all the TV work you've done. You know, seems to me, at least, that, you know, you had a little bit more time with this album. Is that actually the case, or were you still sort of at the mercy of the schedule to, you know, some degree with the bandmates or the label or anything like that?
You know what? You're right, because the whole idea behind this record was there is no deadline. No one's asking me to do a record. No one has really asked me to do a record now that I think about it. No one said, hey, go make a record. I usually say, I'm going to make a record, and I'll find an audience later, hopefully. And that's what I did with this. I knew that I felt compelled to get back in the studio after the show had finished, and I wanted to make sure I had something to say. You know, I know I've got something to say, but I want to make sure I had something to hear. And I feel like a lot of bands are kind of unfairly put in a position where they have to churn out records, whether or not they're creatively prepared to do so. And that does one of two things. Sometimes you end up forcing yourself to write good music. That's the best case scenario. The second case scenario is when you don't have anything to say. You don't have any music that can top your previous music. And I like to try to top myself from record to record. I like to do something I haven't done before. And this record was me, you know, taking a long time with demos, writing and writing and writing, and sifting through the moments that I thought were music and the other stuff I thought was just maybe garbage that was not intended for anyone to ever listen to. So that's what took so long.
Well, I would imagine, though, you know, you were able to enjoy the creative process for once.
Here's the thing about, I guess, being creative for a living that happens is that you have to find a way, you have to start noticing how you're creative and when you're at your creative best. For me, I know that I have like 3 hours every day of good, solid, creative problem solving, like headachey, you know, not fun, like story solution problem, character work, or, you know, musical kind of sorting out of problems. So I know that that happens. And I also know that there are a lot of different moments on each record where I get really excited for one section, and then I'm miserable another part of it, and then I'm excited again. And once I start getting excited again, my second excitement, that's when it means the record's done. So I have to have the misery before that of going, oh my God, I hate this. This sucks. I can't make my voice work. I can't make my guitar hands work. This is going to be the worst record ever. And then I come out the other side and I go, you know what? I'm really proud of this record. I like the way it sounds. I love the production of this record. I really like a couple different things I did with songwriting on this. And so, yeah, so you've got to just kind of challenge yourself, know that they're going to be horrible, shitty points, and then also know that if you keep pushing, you'll come out the other side nice and clean.
Well, yeah, I don't think a lot of people realize, I mean, you know, I was a player for a lot of years and whatnot. I don't think, you know, people outside of the industry or, you know, unless they do something creative like music, you know, I guess maybe painting or something like that could be the same way, but it's really like putting your soul through a strainer, right?
Well, it can be. I mean, it's just, I mean, like it or not, each record ends up being some kind of confrontation with yourself, either spiritually, emotionally, or just artistically. Like, can I make something worth being listened to or watched, you know, if I'm making a TV show? So that's the question is, am I doing anything worth anybody turning their head and, you know, reshifting their focus for? So that's the question I got to ask myself. And I'm pretty hard on myself, but I think it's important to be hard on yourself and also to enjoy when you think you've done it. That's part of the process, too.
Well, I mean, in this day and age where everybody likes to tear everything up, too, I think you have to be hard on yourself. And I think there's a lot of artists out there that aren't hard enough.
Yeah. And, you know, when I come back to it, and it's fun to have just like an artistic overview from project to project. And my overview for this Galacticon 2 project was basically, I'm not doing Death Clock anymore, but I like some of those sounds. And those sounds are all completely me. And people will compare this record to them because, well, ultimately, I am Nathan Explosion, and I am Pickles the Drummer, and I am William Murderface, and I am Squidgarth Squig Elf, and I am also Toki Wartooth. So those guys either lived inside of me before the show, or they continue living inside of me afterwards, but I make their sounds. And so part of that's going to be part of this record as well, too.
Sure. Well, and you've got Ulrich Wilde co-producing again, who also worked on the Death Clock albums. And, I mean, this is a guy who was nominated for a Grammy in 95 for his work with White Zombie. I mean, Astral Creep's just a killer record. And, I mean, he's done great work with the likes of, you know, Deftones and Pantera. And, I mean, but with a guy like you, Brendan, like, who's so independent, is there much for him to do?
Oh, yeah. Trust me, I make that guy's life miserable. I make him wish he stayed in bed. I put him through the meat grinder. Oh, boy. Luckily, he's got the perfect disposition for what he does. And he and I have logged so many hours together where I go, you know what? There's something that I'm not hearing that I want to hear, and I have to start using kind of weird, like, mad libs to try to get him to fill in my sentences and stuff. But he's a huge, important part of what I've been doing for the last... This is the 10-year anniversary of the first Death Clock record came out, and I've kept the same core of people with me, from Ulrich Wilde to Gene Hoagland to Brian Veller on bass. And there's a reason for that, because these guys, I think, take what I do and they enhance it. I think there's a really fun challenge in working with each other, and the challenge is, ultimately, I have to bring something to the table, and it's their job to beat it with something cooler. Do you accept this challenge? And that's what I say every single time. Or Brian, or it's Ulrich, which is basically, I've got this crazy set of ideas, and I want them to sound like somewhere between modern metal production and something that would have happened in the 70s if you'd gotten Roy Thomas Baker, who did like A Night at the Opera or something like that, or if you got Jeff Lynne behind the board and all that stuff. How can we make this sound like a record that's completely modern, 100%, that's also celebrating what I love of 70s production? And that was a big challenge. It was fun to kind of take that, and I think you can hear that in songs like, if you pre-order the album right now, you get a song called My Name is Murder, which is kind of like old school thrash put through like my old brain coffee filter. And then the other one is a song called Nightmare, which is to me like a ballad, even though it's got guitars 70s style production with vocals, like almost Beach Boys style, underneath all this distortion and double kicks and craziness. And then did like a big, long, crazy instrumental section on top of that. So, trust me, Ulrich Wilde is wounded after we're finished one of these, finishing Busted records. He is like mortally wounded. He's hunched over. He's tired. He's panting afterwards. So he has a lot to do. And I show up every day with coffee, and I'm all excited, and I just try to make his life miserable. But you know what? It's sounding really good. And we stay friends afterwards.
Well, there you go. I mean, you got to at least rib the producer a little bit over the course of making a record, right?
Oh, yeah. No, we have, look, I remember when I met him the first time, and I just knew, like, this guy's demeanor is really, he's going to be an important part, because, and this happens in creativity all the time, even if you're working with an editor all the time, or you're working with someone who's compositing or, you know, making TV shows, you're going to end up logging so many hours with that person that you're going to find out really quickly if you have a long-term relationship ahead of you or this is just a one-night stand.
Yeah, I mean, it's very much like getting on the tour bus with somebody. You want to know before you get in the submarine that, you know, you can get along.
Crazy. You know, it's going to get space sickness very quickly. You want to know who, like, yeah, there is and all of the crazy people. Yeah, it's pretty important to get a read on just personality types. And the truth is, I have been lucky enough to surround myself with people who are monstrously talented, like Gene Hoagland, Brian Beller, and Ulrich, and have a sense of humor of themselves, and they can laugh. That's how you put a team together, as far as I'm concerned. And I know some people do it different ways, and sometimes people like volatile craziness and all that stuff, but I'm one of those guys who likes to keep it deadpan, low-key, and hopefully funny.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, certainly congratulations on, you know, the upcoming 10-year anniversary of the Death album. I was just listening to the record last night, actually, you know, getting all prepped for our interview here. And, you know, I mean, 2007, you know, might not seem that long ago to a lot of people, but, you know, let's say you listen to an album that was made in 87, in 97. I think, you'd notice some big differences. And, I mean, yeah. I think the album still sounds really fresh and holds up in contrast to a lot of albums that have come out in between 07 and now. Like, I still, and I know you like the production better on the later albums and ways and whatnot, but I think the record still sounds great.
Well, I appreciate that. And, you know, I'm the last person to ask to, because my point of view of how a record works is going to be totally different than how the listener listens to it, because I'm going to hear mistakes. That's why I can't watch my TV show or anything I've done after I put it to bed. I basically go, here's the ritual when I finish a project. And this is with TV, but, and not always music, but it's usually you go, okay, if I had more time, I would do X, Y, and Z. But mm-hmm. Having said that, I have to make peace with what I think is really working on this record and what isn't. And then I got to move on with my life and hopefully still enjoy the whole process. And that's what I did with this. But, you know, I'm still on the, even though this record to me in my head has been finished for a little while, I still really enjoy hearing it. I enjoy hearing the music and the production and putting it on headphones and hearing what we did with all the really fun stuff, just panning and going full 70s in the mix.
Well, it's funny because I had Eric Johnson on this show, and I know you dig his playing as I do, and he, he talked about not being able to listen to his stuff either, because basically all he hears are the mistakes.
It's ridiculous because that guy is one of the most amazing of all time. But you're right. See, it doesn't matter. Like, for him, like, he's on another level of guitar playing, but of course, he's got to be nitpicky. See, that's the thing about, I think, just deciding to become a musician and deciding to record is that you have to kind of be the director of yourself. You have to be the executive producer of yourself, and you have to say, look, this is cool over here, but it's not cool enough to earn a part in this song. So what can I do to up the stakes, to up the piece of music? How can I make this earn its way into the song as opposed to just being another thing that I'm adding? So I think those guys ask themselves those kinds of questions. I try to, but Eric Johnson, the crazy guitar magician, who we share a drummer. Another drummer I play with, Joe Travers, a lot of live comedy with, just went on tour with.
Went on tour with Eric?
Yeah.
Oh, wow, that's cool.
And Eric, and Joe Travers, if you know who he is, he's played with Dweezil Zappa, Duran Duran, and all kinds of people. He is just a hot shot. He can do anything, and he's really great to be around, too.
Now, Brendan, I heard you say in the past that you felt, you know, even when Metalocalypse became a success, that you constantly had to prove it to people, even, you know, people at the network that just didn't seem to believe it. So, you know, certainly it would seem to me that Adult Swim didn't really know what they had.
Well, they did. I mean, the truth is, look, at the the end of the day, you can pitch that a show's creative, a show is funny, but creativity and funny, those are all subjective. So at the end of the day, all you have are numbers of viewership and albums sold and guitars sold and DVDs sold. And we did really great numbers, so I don't think you have to, any idiot can see that our show was quite successful. But I think the thing that's more important than its success is that it's memorable. You know, when you turn off an episode, basically you're still thinking about those weird characters and the music and what you just saw, some crazy visual sequence that you'd enjoy. And that's what my job is to basically, and that's all I can try to do, is to build a project that lives inside your head after you turn off the stereo or after you turn off your TV or your computer or whatever it is. But that's the thing that I'm more concerned about. And I already know, I mean, like, I don't have to be told that Metalocalypse was successful. I've seen the bottom line and I've seen the numbers. So
right.
Whether or not they knew what they had, I don't know. TV's not, look, here's the thing about TV. It's not a democracy. It's basically, it's an oligarchy, and sometimes it's run by someone who has good days and they have bad days, and you're at the mercy. So every day that you survive in TV is a stay of execution. So we know that going in, you know. We're not like a,
yeah, it could end tomorrow.
I can say this is an unfair landscape, but it's the same landscape that gave me the better part of a decade's worth of TV success and put me on the map as a musician, as a guitar player who got to put out signatures. I mean, I win. Any way you look at it, I can't say anything is bad about this. They should have put out the final thing, and I think they know.
I think they know
that it's going to go down as an injustice, and they could have flipped that switch very easily should they have wanted to. And I think I know they realized they made the wrong move.
Right. Well, I mean, with the cancellation, did they tell you what was going on there? Like whether it was financial or was there like creative tension?
Really, it's been like basically every kind of few weeks the story would change, like there's not enough money or there's something else or blah blah. So it was really murky the way that they handled it, and I just wanted clarity on my end. So I do what I usually do, is I man up and have an uncomfortable conversation, and sometimes they don't want to have that, and that's basically where we left it, and they don't want to have that uncomfortable conversation. Even though I've tried, look, I realize TV is a crazy place, but I like working in it. I have been insanely lucky having two shows that have run for long amounts of time, and all I can say is that it's a weird landscape, but I chose to be a part of it, so, and everything ended up really good. Aside from this last thing, which is like, for me, that's the deal I entered into. So I can't feel bad. I feel bad for the fans, though, who put all this time, effort, and just care into the show. They cared about it. They got tattoos. They started speaking like the characters. These people went nuts and really, really let this thing become a part of their lives. So those are the guys that got screwed. Me, I didn't get screwed at all.
Well, I mean, it's like playing a sport or whatever, right? You know, it's not ballet getting in.
Right.
Because of how things ended and whatnot, or I don't know what the agreement was, but, you know, obviously, you know, you've said in the past that the idea was to create a show that could exist outside of TV. You know, if the show got canceled, you could go on to make music and so on. And obviously you're still making music, but as for Death Clock, like what's the deal with the rights now? Or, you know, do they still have a hold over that? Or
they do. It's theirs. It's completely theirs, which is kind of why I just decided I'm not going to, obviously they've been very difficult to work with and they don't want to talk about anything. So I just said, you know what? I'm just making the decision. I'm not going to do anything under that name, under that moniker. I am not interested in, I'd rather just like, and I don't think they're interested in making records or any of that stuff either. So I just figured, you know, I'm going to continue with my musical life where I left off because I can. That's part of who I am. That's what I do. And I think there's a fan base that's waiting for some stuff. So I said, no more Death Clock. And it's an easy decision for me to make. I'd rather do stuff under my own name or my own project name. Anyway, it just makes it much simpler for me. And again, I don't own that other stuff. And that trade-off with them owning the name and all that stuff, I would do that the same way every single time, because what ends up happening is the project benefits, and therefore me and my team benefit, and then the fans benefit. So I would have done it identically and then switched my project name anyway.
Okay, well, I mean, that's a super positive way to look at it, and I just, you know, in a perfect world, I wish, you know, companies like this would, you know, if they're not going to do anything with it, I wish they'd just, you know, cut you loose and let you do whatever. I mean, you said you're going to change the name anyway, you know, or do your own thing, but...
Yeah, I mean, I think what you have to do, you know, in any business is look at stuff from their point of view and look at stuff from your point of view, and sometimes it just doesn't add up. So, for example, these guys put millions of dollars into advertising Metalocalypse and Death Clock and all that stuff. I don't think they're just going to... to hand that off because they have so much money invested. They could maybe potentially sell it off, but they said that they had no interest in that. So I just figured I don't have that kind of money and they're not interested. I'm barking up the wrong tree and that'll just waste everyone's life. And you're only given a certain amount of life, as it turns out. You may as well do something cool and quit bitching about it. So that's why we're here today.
Well, true enough, man. Now, I love the easy for me to say. I love the satirical nature of the show, and you know, I know you love the Marx Brothers and Woody Allen, but who else would you say had a big influence on the comedy of Metalocalypse? Because I know everybody has you on, and they want to talk guitars and this or that. But the show was very funny, and I think you know people forget that you know you're out there doing stand up and you know this or that where you can, and you know you're a funny guy, and the humor was such an integral part of that show. I never understand when I watch all these interviews with you and stuff. Nobody bothers to bring it up. So what influenced all of that?
Well, it really depends where I'm doing an interview. If it's for the show, some people just want to talk about comedy, and some people just want to talk about what pickups I'm using. So I'm excited to talk about it. But for Metalocalypse, it was really interesting because I was not really a fan of the quarter hour format. It just felt like it was a setup for something, and I thought I haven't seen what I want to do with this show done on TV as far as structure, and it's a really strange structure, the quarter hour. So that was something that was in my head, and I don't know where I would leave off on a climatic point and kind of continue that into credits and let everyone kind of get excited, and there's almost kind of like, it's almost rubbing up against its own time slot. So I don't know if there's any kind of influence I had other than experimentation. And so our last moment was the moment that would get kind of seared into your brain. Like if it's a little girl turning into some kind of a cadaver or something you're about to eat a baby or a sweet song about a cat that died. I know those ending moments. I would say The Sopranos actually really started using music really smart for story and character somewhere around the second season. So The Sopranos, I think, is that kind of changed how, I remember they would have this poignant moment and they would play a song that was a well-curated song that was either by the Stones or some artist, but it would always kind of be impactful. And I realized that's the power of music and good storytelling and a character that we can, good or evil, get behind. And so I kind of thought about that a little bit during Metalocalypse. I'm also really trying to rip off, and you would never know it in Metalocalypse, but I'm trying to rip off Albert Brooks, Lost in America. So you'll see scenes of like protracted negotiations, which I really love that he did in Lost in America. There's so many scenes where he's trying to negotiate something and he has no leverage for it whatsoever. And the act of him trying to get something is not earned. There's no way he's going to get it. Just makes me laugh every time. So in Lost in America, Albert Brooks tried to get Gary Marshall to give him his money that his wife has just gambled away back. He was trying to get the money back. And we're just sitting there watching going, there's no way any regular human has ever talked to a casino owner into getting his money back. But let's see how this plays out. And of course, it's a disaster. And I love that thing because there's so much pathos and stupidity. You cannot outsmart the fates at times. You cannot outsmart that you got fucking unlucky. And I love that. So I put a lot of that in a William Murder thing, believe it or not. And particularly in season 4, he is kind of he's just losing his grasp on his position in the band. And watching him kind of scramble was really fun for me. And those were the scenes that I really enjoyed writing.
Outstanding. So what's next, man? I mean, do you have touring plans for Galacticon or more TV stuff?
All that stuff. Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. Like I'd say in grandiosity and epicness, this record is going to give my other records the run for their money. And that was kind of the idea because of the story behind it, etc. Now, that's what I keep on doing is trying to top myself. And for live shows, our Death Clock shows were really, really fun. And they're really exciting, and you're not going to forget it. Because it was part of the narrative. There was comedy, and there was animation. And then I had just one of the most amazing bands touring. Luckily, I had Mike Keneally, played with Frank Zappa, and plays with Satriani now.
No slouch.
Yeah, he's no slouch. And Gene Hoagland and Brian Beller. And these guys are just a monster band. So I could basically put a band together that's so good that if I drop my guitar and fall over, no one would leave. Everyone would be like, this is still very good. Forget about what happened to that guy. And so that's what I want to do. If I'm going to do this live, I basically am putting myself in a position of having to beat that show and use this new aesthetic and make it even cooler and more badass than anything I've done. So that's the challenge. So I answer that with a lot of hesitation. And I find the resources to make something that's way cooler than the last thing I did. Well, I would also say check out, in conjunction with Galacticon, we're doing a comic book with Eric Powell, who is best known for The Goon, which is a really great comic book as well. So he and I are putting out a 6-part Galacticon issue run, and it's turning out really cool. The artwork is really exciting. Just doing artwork in conjunction with this kind of 70s sci-fi world is really fun. So there's just so much cool art out there. There's so much storytelling going on in this project, and the new record and the old. And August 2nd, the comic book comes out, so check your local comic book store for Galacticon. And the record comes out August 25th. Which you can pre-order now, and if you pre-order now, you get to listen to My Name is Murder and Nightmare, two very different songs. They're kind of opposite sides of the coin of the same record, to mix metaphors. So, there's that. And then Epiphone, I have the Snow Falcon, Flying V, that just came out this year, doing really well. And check that out, because you can hear it on this record as well.
Well, you hear that, guitar players? You got another fiddle to pick up and try to squeak out a couple licks, try to keep up with Brendan. I don't think that you're going to be able to do it, but you should buy the guitar and give it a shot anyway.
I appreciate that.
Thanks so much again, man. I really appreciate you coming on, and I'd love to have you back if you got the time sometime.
I appreciate it, and we'll definitely do it.
Awesome, man. Well, good luck with the record, my friend. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, thanks.
Cheers, brother.
Part talk show, part rock show. You are listening to The Casey Ferguson Show on Amherst Island Radio 92.1 FM. That was my conversation with musician, comedian, voice actor, and television producer, Brendan Small. Once again, Brendan's new album, Galacticon 2, is available for pre-order now and hits stores August 25th. To pick up a copy and for all things Brendan, check out brendansmall.com. While I'm plugging away, I might as well thank the new sponsor of The Casey Ferguson Show here on 92.1 FM, Farmer Vincent's Smoked Meats.
It takes all kinds of critters to make Farmer Vincent's. And fritters.
Be sure to check out Farmer Vincent's wide selection of delicious smoked meats at 49 Colburn Street in Kingston. And remember, you can't beat Farmer Vincent's meat. Back to the music. Here's a brand new track from Brendan Small's forthcoming Galacticon 2 release. This is My Name is Murder on The Casey Ferguson Show.
Radio, and you're listening to The Casey Ferguson Show.
Pleasure beyond measure. You are listening to The Casey Ferguson Show, the only program on the radio that stays crunchy, even in milk. Hard to believe that one came out 20 years ago on Seven Dust's self-titled album. Still sounds as heavy as ever. The track is called Black. Before that, you heard a brand new tune from Brendan Small's Galacticon 2 called My Name is Murder. Well, I don't know about you, but I feel at least slightly better after blowing off some steam. Hey, the music might not take our troubles away, but it can help us forget them for a while, and sometimes that's good enough. I see my new roommate and confidant, Doug McFly, the most metal fly in a 15-block radius, has joined me. Do you have anything to add, Doug? That was beautiful, man. Well, time for Doug and I to say goodbye. Five Finger Death Punch will play us out with a track called The Bleeding. Remember, it's only an island if you look at it from the water. Until next time, this is Casey Ferguson and Doug McFly, over and out.
It's over.